Welcome back to Minds Matter, a podcast sponsored by the Monash Center for Consciousness and Contemplative Studies. I'm Beth.
And I'm Ava. And on Minds Matter, we explore research from neuroscience to psychology while occasionally talking through our own personal experiences.
And this week on the podcast, both me and Ava sat down and had a chat with Dr. Nina Rychik, who just finished her postdoc at SensiLab in Monash. And Nina is super cool. We actually didn't talk about this, but she started off in particle physics and then she went into philosophy and more cognitive science and looking at how we can use, I mean, she doesn't love the term AI and art, but as an artist using large language models to see what she can create through that and answering more of these questions about AI and its meaning and purpose through art, which is really cool. So we chat about that. We chat about how that's changed as AI changes. So the initial forms of, I guess, AI art, and this isn't like the DALL-E funny pictures that are creating more like poetry and stuff. And then we talk about our feelings about AI, where it's going. I am always, of course, naive to what's happening in the world. So Ava and Nina give me some rude awakenings. Yeah, so I hope you guys enjoy and that this gives you a new perspective on AI.
I'm an artist and researcher, and I've been working with language models specifically for like generative language models for 5 or 6 years now. 7 years, actually. And yeah, my practice is mainly focused around how to use these models in like performative kind of installations, and more recently moving into public installations with AI. And then alongside that, I also have a kind of like design-based research approach. And yeah, just more recently, I've been interested in more philosophical approach to understanding AI and also the philosophy of mind as well. So that's like the full, encapsulates like the full journey. Yeah.
And just so everyone can understand, are the language models, is that what we're thinking about ChatGPT? Like what, or is that like little robots? What is that?
Yeah. I mean, GPT was, so I think generative text kind of and natural language processing has been around for, 10 or 20 years, and people have been working on that. I think I came into it when it was very much like, how do we get computers to write poetry and let's train a recurrent neural network on Shakespeare and see if we can produce it. So I came in right at the time when it wasn't working very well, and it was really only done in a poetry sense, or people couldn't really imagine that it was ever going to be like passing the Turing test or anything. And yeah, perfect timing. And then GPT-2 came out, which was the first, quite a big leap towards like, this is quite coherent, and it was the first transformer model, basically. But yeah, I mean, I guess I've been alongside those massive developments all the way up until GPT-3 or ChatGPT, when it became like commonplace and not so much about like creativity or how to use it in as a kind of generative system necessarily, but really now it's more about conversation and actually being used as a tool in different ways. It's like fully expanded beyond, I think, what I was trying to do anyway. But it's really interesting to be alongside that.
Yeah, I didn't know, Ava, did you know that before it was good, it was used? So was it used for poetry because it wasn't good and it was interesting? It's like,
I mean, people were trying to make it good. There was like other times I came into creative research at the beginning. So that was like my in. I wanted to do like something with AI and creativity was something kind of art-based, installation-based, using AI, whatever that meant. People were doing translation, actually trying to get it to a good level. But I think that getting to the transformer model was one of the kind of biggest leaps, I would say. And yeah, it's interesting the transition from when it was creatively interesting to now. It's also really like was not say not hard for me because it left me. It's like all of those problems have been solved,
right?
And you can still make it creatively interesting. But what was so aesthetically, like, what was so interesting about it, the early versions was the particular kind of aesthetic that it had in the eras. So where that's what I was interested in. So it would be wrong most of the time, or like there'd be a lot of repetition. And so there was like a kind of particular poetic signature or something that GPT-2 did. That was like, oh, I like this style, if that makes sense. And then it blended in with my own style. And yeah, now it's a lot different though. I think it's hard to push it. You have to ruin it in a way, or like degrade it in some way. Or yeah, there's other approaches, but it's a bit harder now, I think, to use it creatively.
Oh, that's so interesting. Did you know about that, Ava?
I knew that there were like other generative AI before GPT-3. I knew there were ones before that hadn't been released to the public. But I guess because most of the time when we, especially in academia, talk about these AI models, it's in like, these are the death of creativity. Like, this is going to be the end of any type of like art, design, anything that humans can do. Like, it seems like we're using this to replace all the interesting things that humans can do rather than having it do the tasks that are boring. So I never really thought about how like the versions that were quote unquote worse for a lot of our daily use might actually have been better for creative endeavors. So I'm just like curious about your approach and like what, how you saw it contributing to your poetry, and how you saw it as like merging with your style. And like, did you see it as a more of a kind of collaborative effort than you see now because it's gotten like too good?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that early, the stuff that at least I was aware of at that time, like 2015 to 2018 or something, was this goal of creating a creative machine. That was a big research goal for a lot of people. So they actually wanted the machine itself to be creative. That was, and I think that's where we've gotten there, arguably. Or what they wanted came true, and then everyone realized, oh, this isn't actually creative at all. It's interesting. But I think the way I came into it was like, I mean, from the beginning, I didn't really see the actual. So when you're talking about like, okay, can you get an AI to generate poetry? I didn't see much value in kind of just having like what, thousands or millions of generated AI poems. Like, I didn't see why that was valuable to anyone for any reason. So what I was trying to do by putting it in installations was more create this like new experience. And I think what the specific thing I was trying to get at, also now I can reflect back to 5 or 6 years ago and understand my motivation, which at the time I don't think I was fully like aware of. But I think what it was for me was just this idea of using this technology to create an authorless text in this particular kind of interaction, and kind of provoking this question to people about where the meaning of like text comes from. So when you read a poem, there's like this sense that if it resonates with you, there's some like communication or something happening between the author and the reader. But yeah, if you're like, this is generated right now, right in front of you, and you find it meaningful, so what, where did that meaning come from? Why? Yeah, I just think that like, I found that, I think I was always interested in like poetry and specifically like text in public places and like found poetry and things like that. So I just wanted to do that and thought technology would be the way to do it.
I feel like this is a good time to actually talk about, so I'm not sure if Ava, if you've seen any of the pieces, they're very cool. The Mirror Glass Ritual and the This Is Not Your Breaking Point. And I think that really makes clear like how this meaning and these ideas work.
Yeah. Yeah. So Mirror Ritual, that was the first thing I worked on. So essentially it's like a smart mirror, like a two-way mirror that has a camera behind it, and was using really rudimentary machine learning classification to perceive somebody's emotional state. So it just went to like the 6 basic emotions, and then that was passed in and mapped to essentially like, yeah, really simplistic implementation at the time. But I used GPT-2 that was fine-tuned, and then a poem would appear on the screen that was meant to be a response to the viewer's emotion, which is, I've still been working on that idea roughly, but maybe interpreting it in different ways since then. And yeah, it was such a cool experience because I think the idea, like, I was really into the idea, really wanted to make it happen, but actually like seeing people used it and the way that everyone like responded to it over the years is like still just so like rewarding. And there's something about it that like it really did validate what I thought would happen, which is that people do project a lot onto
like they got a lot of meaning from it. Because it still at Collingwood Yards?
Yeah.
So there's this very cool place in Melbourne, Collingwood Yards, and it's up there. So it's like if you're in Melbourne, you can go and see it.
Yeah, even looking back now, it's again, it's like I'm just constantly like reassessing everything in the, within the current state of what I know and what I'm learning at the moment. But yeah, it's so interesting how much so much of it is projection. And when you keep the text deliberately vague, it's like how horoscopes work.
Yeah.
It allows you to like
have that meaning.
Yeah. But then again, it's a little bit more complicated now, especially when the technology is getting more sophisticated. There's probably other things to consider as well. And then the other work?
The one, this is not your breaking point, the writing one.
Yeah.
I love this one.
That one. I find this one's harder to talk about because I never really made a research. Like what, just, yeah, like a complete, I really cannot justify it. But I think I was really into, I was into like asemic art, which is essentially like marks that look like language, like handwriting or like other, or like glyphs or something, but they have no meaning. And so that just that sense of looking at something that you're supposed to be reading.
Yeah. And you get a meaning from it, even though there's nothing in there.
William S. Burroughs and Brian Geisen, back in that kind of generation, they like started it roughly. They were doing this kind of stuff, like cut up technique with found poetry. And Brian Geisen did some like asemic writing stuff. And there's like a big tradition of it, but I guess it's meant to be something about like your subconscious or unconscious or something that's like still getting some meaning or feeling from that. So yeah, I became just obsessed like with the visual language of it. And I wanted to combine the generative text, like the actual content, with like the way that I want to express it visually. So essentially I just had this robot that was writing a list and it was on like an endless scroll of paper. And so it was just being live generated. And then there was like live generated handwriting as well. And I would get it to write really like clearly sometimes. And then other times it would just be like scribbling. So it went in and out. And then I just did this performance in the city in Melbourne CBD with just running it for 2 weeks straight. And so I had seeing like all of the paper build up. And I think also something I was just that kind of like psychosis of like hypergraphia when people can't stop writing, or also stream of consciousness and like endless thinking. And so what getting an AI or a robot to do that. And so there's many ways, I guess, you can interpret what that work means. But
so one of the things when I first heard you speak, and I feel like I'm going to butcher this, and I think I asked it in the lab and I was like, wasn't super clear. So maybe Ava can help me. But I thought one of the things that you presented is this idea of, so as humans, we have meaning in the world and like we create meaning. And for me, what your work showed was how we can, the AI can create meaning, not just in a way that, oh, it's going to write my resume or it's going to do something basic, but like actually these bigger, more profound things in art, but not on its own, but these kind of things that you can make together, like your work that's half human work, half AI work, and what impact that will have and the meaning we take from that as society. And I'd never thought of that idea before. I just had put like tech, AI, the creativity is really poor. And I'd never thought of this like joint creation. Yeah.
It is a weird, I think, because there's a whole field of new media art, which is essentially, making art works, installations usually with like the newest technology. And like, there's not that many people that I know of doing things with language models. There's like a bit here and there. So it makes sense that, obviously 90% of people know about GPT, like ChatGPT, and that's all they ever knew. I don't mind it in a way, but I do think, but also it's validating, right? Because at the beginning, I was always like, this isn't ever, like having a poem published in a book that like an AI wrote, I feel like will never be interesting as it currently stands, like with the technology we currently have. But there is ways to make it interesting. And I think it's just more of like, I guess, visual interactive art with text, which Jenny Holzer is like a huge influence of mine. But yeah, I think it's more just, I wanted to use this technology to really just like at the kind of, it just came out, what's like the most interesting thing I can do with it within the space of language and also exploring like materiality of language and meaning. And yeah, I just am really interested in the way people project onto ambiguous language, but also ambiguous everything. Like, it's not just text.
I feel like I've projected a lot then.
Yeah. I think that's what's so cool. Like, a lot of my work is just, sorry to say, but it's revealing of me, obviously, but it's also revealing of the people's like interpretation of it is super revealing of them.
Yeah.
So some people don't really like connect. Some people connect too much. Yeah, a lot of people, because it is like ambiguous and vague, so it, like, it basically makes itself open to projection, and people would come to me and just be so like creeped out basically by all the things that happened. But especially with the mirror early, and like, because before that technology wasn't, no one knew of that technology, people would use the mirror and just really be like, I don't say paranoid, but like really serious about asking me how it knew things about them.
Yeah.
So I think that's like, I'm like, yeah, I feel like I'm like gaslighting people or something. But I was like, it really, it's so basic, but it's really happening in the way that all the parts come together. That's where that I need all of those parts. You need to be like material thing in front of you. And I think that's what's interesting to me is how to, the meaning isn't just in the words. Also in the, like, people having their preconceived ideas of AI, like the term AI, surveillance, paranoia around that. So there's so many things that you like also projecting onto it. But yeah, I just think it's a cool, like a Rorschach test or something.
Yeah,
to see what people, what they say about it.
Yeah, and I think I've always been in the camp of like, AI has never made anything beautiful. And then when I saw your art, I was like, oh, wait, this actually is beautiful. And because it was hybrid. And then I think that changed.
I think obviously now AI art is such a terrible rap. But I think I don't know. I wonder what the future of it is, honestly. Like, if it will, because that is such, that's like 99% of everything now is just that we hate AI art, and especially artists.
Yeah, my artist friends hate it.
Yeah. So I think, but I think it's, I mean, I don't know. I'm not like fully discouraged a little bit. Not even because of the, more just because of, it's basically just created to be a tool. Like, I think the technology itself has potential, but what they're releasing, like what is, it's so censored and like it's not really been owned by you. And there's just ways in which it is just being sold as a tool for productivity. It's hard to get around that and actually make it interesting now.
I guess to the point of the idea of like projecting things onto these texts that in some ways, like I think like in the conversations that Beth and I've had about AI and like spirituality and things, I know that Beth is like very anti-tech. But I think, to your point, Nina, that I think people sometimes can be biased by the fact that you know that it's coming from AI. But I think the fact that there's, for the poems from the mirror ritual, because it feels like there's a person behind it because you created it with this intention, that then I guess like Beth, you feel like maybe there's something that you can like attach to and be like, oh, I see the intention that is human behind this. But then if it were just completely random text that AI were just generating, but if you had been told that there had been this intention behind it, then I think that people could probably interpret it the same way and also feel that kind of attachment to it. And like you said, I was about to say exactly the same thing about the horoscopes, about how it's basically just, it could be anything. And I think it's the same even for dreams. Like, I think you can interpret anyone's dream as your own, and it like says more about you the way it's being interpreted than like what the dream actually is. So in some ways, I don't know. I think I'm more of a nihilist in general with this stuff, but I feel like I don't really necessarily buy the argument that AI is not creative or like less creative than people, because I think that co-construction of meaning and the meaning that the viewer is imposing onto whatever the artwork is actually such a big part of it. And I don't know. So I guess I'm not sure how I feel about necessarily being like, oh, AI art is crap, or just because we're adding this human component, it makes a big difference. I don't know. Which I know is, I feel like Beth is like, no.
That's probably on reflection why I had such a big reaction to your art. Actually,
I hate AI art. And you feel like,
And I really struggle. And like when Ava and I have conversations about the future, Ava's, oh, we're going to become like hybrid people where we're going to have like chips in our brains and all that stuff. And I'm like, no, we have a soul, and that's just doing something. And like, I remember I asked you a question. It's not like the brain at all. So I guess that's why I've had this reaction of, what? No, this is beautiful. I don't know.
I mean, I agree with most of that. I don't think I really thought that far ahead to be. Like, especially with, like, new technology, you're like, I don't know, I was young. I'm not trying to contribute to that. I was like, with this, like, master plan to replace creativity. No, I have a problem with it too, for sure. And especially now, like, increasingly. And I think I'm not so much in the area of, like, ethics, but just trying to understand what it's going to do to cognition, I think is, like, my main, that's, like, where I'm going now. Because I think, yeah, I think I probably will still keep this practice as it is, which is basically just a writing practice. I mean, it's just an art practice. It doesn't really involve. Now I just have the tool that I need. And I'm not sure if I'm going to necessarily continue with it as a technology or so. I'm not 100%. But I just think, yeah, what kind of, through that process of making these works, I would always reflect on, like, how is this changing my brain? Like, not my brain, but my writing style, let's say. Is this kind of influencing me? And I would talk a lot about cyborg, post-human kind of creativity where there is a way, yeah, it's like this feedback loop or, I don't know, I think a lot of it, I would approach it with, this is a medium, like any tool, right? So like any creativity software, creativity support tool. And so people will use it towards their human intentions and human creative intentions, which is what I did. But I think as time goes on, yeah, I am definitely have concerns around things like de-skilling. But I think, I mean, it's seriously concerning though. I did use ChatGPT a fair bit because that's how I would use with the poetry stuff. I would do a collaborative thing where I would start with an AI-generated poem, get some inspiration from that, build on it, or I would basically project, right? Like, oh, that's actually what I'm trying to say. And then I would actually do that process in a creative way. And then I would, for my PhD. But what I found doing the same thing with ChatGPT, trying to actually produce work, like not creative work, but just producing whatever ideas or using it for whatever everyone uses it for, is that it always makes things worse. Like, I'm pretty sure that it's making me stupider and it's making my ideas worse. And even though I did believe, like, okay, get ChatGPT to generate somewhere to start from, right? You're not starting from the blank page anymore. You have this text to play with and you can move it around. It already has way too much influence. It's already like making everything. What's the word? Not reductive, but just so normalized, like, and standardized to the norm, right?
Yeah.
And there's some way in which, I don't know if you've ever had this, if you're trying to brainstorm how to, where you want to take a paper or like what kind of questions you want to ask or how you want to structure it or something, it always gives you the most like easy, most basic answer that anyone would get. So I really think, and this is just even for creative thinking and research or creative thinking in any kind, even science, I think it's really detrimental. I think people are actually struggling to come up with new things because, they become so reliant. So I think, really just the last few months, I think it's just doing me a disservice to use it at all. I talked to someone who, had this really great idea about it, which was, I think they were an advertising, video producer. And he said he would use ChatGPT, ask his questions so he knows what not to do.
Yeah.
In a creative sense, right? Because that's something that like already probably has been done or has been thought about.
Yeah.
You're trying to create something new.
Then don't,
So this is where you don't want to go.
Because I purposely don't use it for those things. So I'll use it for, fix my resume or something. But I'm thinking of my thesis title at the moment and I'm like, oh, it would be so easy just to be like, please write a thing. But I'm like, no, don't do it. And if I write any creative things, I really try. Even for ideas, I try not to.
I think it actually messed me up a little bit when it's not even like I rely on what the output is, but it changes what you think, right? Yeah. Like you get the thesis title and then maybe you can't get that out of your brain. Like it's actually better to, I think it's better to just start with completely blank.
Because this is very interesting. I thought Nina was going to come on and be pro, let's just AI everything.
No. I don't know. My opinions change all the time though, right?
I
think it's cool. I think what I'm interested in now, maybe creatively and otherwise, is just more like autonomous, completely just questions around like people making autonomous systems or, I guess ethical and cognitive questions around people having actual relationships with, which is obviously happening. Yeah.
like relationship with AI.
Yeah.
Is that, Ava, did you know that?
What? Yeah.
I'm thinking like Replica, which is, it's like an app people can have romantic relationships with, like a avatar that they've selected.
That's an app?
Yeah, it's been around for a few years actually.
But I'm not up to date with anything.
Any technology. This one was in the news and stuff a bit because, yeah, I won't go back into the whole story, but it's thriving. It's still GPT-4. Yeah, it's still going. They do erotic role play.
Basically.
Yeah.
Just with AI.
Some people. You can go on
the You're so sweet, summer child. You're like, people are talking to robots. What about my real friend?
Yeah. If you go on the subreddit, there's people who are like, this is, I'll never say goodbye. Like they would, yeah, they completely like fully attached.
And are people looking at
sorry, like, I'm giving you like the worst news ever. Like, this did happen like 2 years ago.
And are people looking into the psychology and health of those relationships?
It's all like industry.
Oh.
Yeah. That's why, I mean, yeah, I think that's why. Doing, it's actually just not that much happening, but doing research around how AI is actually like, changing relationships, changing cognition is super, super important because obviously it's the biggest arms race situation now. I mean, I haven't really kept up to date with it recently, but they're just trying to, they think that it'll be the answer to everything. And so they're all trying to get their AGI, whatever that means, as soon as possible. And yeah, it's just no time to like consider the consequences or yeah, do any kind of, yeah, it's pretty grim. And there's arguments for why it could be good.
Because Mike, one of my questions was, do you have hope or concerns for AI? But I guess it's
That's a tough question. That's a tough question. And don't you think it just changes as things come out? And it's, I always am changing my mind. I think there's different moments of hope that I had. At one point I thought that, okay, great, AI generated images. That's solved or whatever, and videos, like, and then at the same time I've been hate social media, right, like we all do, and I had this idea that it would basically flood the platforms in a way where people would just find all of that stuff meaningless now because there's no way to tell the difference, or that stuff is so much cheaper to produce that it will just be, you know, it'll ruin itself almost, like poison itself.
Yeah.
And somehow that would like fight against the whole social media problem. But I'm not sure that is happening.
What do you think, Ava? No?
I don't think so. I mean, it's making the stuff that people want to see. I feel like people, even sometimes I will look at a video and I'm like, oh, interesting. And then I realize that's not Jim Carrey. You know, like something like that, where it takes me a second, even though I feel like I'm more literate than like a boomer in AI.
Yeah.
But I think definitely people's parents are sending them stuff that is 100% AI and that they like really can't tell. So
how did it feel? How did it feel when you found out you had been like tricked?
I think it was just more me feeling like, oh, if I am being tricked, then I can't imagine how like people who are not, who didn't grow up with the internet, you must be just taking in all these, the misinformation of it all is just gonna be so easy to make worse. And it just, I think because it's almost like having Coca-Cola in the sense of it's like all these like artificial sweeteners and like all these things that like your body has evolved to want because of the way that, you know, the way that our organisms evolved. But then now you have this like artificial dose of it, like on times 1,000, because it was already like that with people making their own posts where we were manipulating emotions and like getting these shock values or whatever. But with AI, it's just so much easier. So I think it's so hard to combat that. Also in the context of people being exhausted because they have to work so hard and everyone's grinding and doing all their things. Like you just want to go home and scroll and then maybe have like a hit of some intense emotions that you can share with someone else. So I think it's, I'm not optimistic about AI. And I think already like most of our feeds are AI, right? That's what people are saying, that it really has flooded the platforms.
And then
I think so.
I think someone, I think I saw a stat that was like, or like on Reddit, used to go on Reddit. It was like, it's like 30% of bots or 30% of comments are actually coming
from Reddit.
Yeah. I know that was hard to.
I thought Reddit was like where the people are.
But there's literally no way. Reddit is actually, it's totally anonymous. Yeah. They're trying to do stuff to combat it. But yeah, if you think of something like Reddit or the comments section, like why would you think that any of them are real humans?
Yeah, I guess
it's so disturbing
to think about it. Actually, no, 30% of Minds Matter downloads are bots.
Oh, well. But I'm glad they're listening.
Yes. What are they doing with it?
Making Minds Matter copies, maybe?
Like making deep pics.
Stop. That's on it. That's like truly, no, I'm like actually afraid of them. Like I've called my parents and been like, we need to have like passcodes and stuff.
Like you called them to like beware of that, didn't you?
Yeah. Like we have passcodes because I'm so scared.
Yeah.
Whoa.
The other thing, I was going to say to your point about it's like hyper-normal stimuli, basically, of like social media was already doing it, right? So it's like the algorithm is optimizing for you to stay, to maximize your screen time. And so then it goes and it's like working really well. That was already an AI system that was forming this relationship with you, changing your behavior. That's where I started with my research as well, as being like, if it's not, you're not creative, it's not making images yet, but it already is. People are already in these relationships with AI that is like completely changing their perception of the world. And then you have now, okay, you have AI generated content that can even more quickly be suited towards giving you what you want, right? But then the next thing that I think is happening now is Meta AI, which well, like Facebook.
Yeah.
Which they're doing the same thing with chat. DMs, so or relationships, right? So you have an AI friend, and then that's now optimized to say exactly what you want to hear. So you keep talking to them longer, and that one's really disturbing, right? Because you're pretty much there. Like you could have a full relationship with an AI, and it could convince, I would say, most people, and they could project a lot onto it and actually have like feelings. That's already happening.
I'm sorry. Do you think
like you're like someone from like 2010? Like give some bad news for you about what happened.
Yes,
in the last 15 years.
Climate change isn't as bad yet, and it's all gonna be okay. We've got hope to hold on to. But so forming a relationship with AI that's already happening, do you think, and this is, I'm curious what both of you think. Is that something that we're like fundamentally just wired? Is that fixing a problem of, because it's loneliness, everyone's isolated? Is that, could that problem be solved just by having stronger communities? Or is that something we would just have no matter what? So even if I have all my communities, I still would want the validation and satisfaction of my AI friend. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, obviously it's used, like it's, not piggybacking, but that problem we're having in society right now, which was caused by technology, arguably, and then now they're trying to make an argument that, oh, it's actually making people less lonely. It's like technology was the thing that got us, I would say, here, if you have that kind of Luddite perspective of being disconnected and things like that. And so then it's, oh, okay, but let's use technology to solve that problem now. It's just that on this recursive cycle. I don't know if it's, it's a bit depressing, but I don't know if, like, in theory, having community would solve a lot of that and prioritizing, like, real world things.
Yeah.
But that's not the direction it's going.
Because I guess I was thinking receiving all this new information about the world I guess I was like, what can I do to help? And I was like, if you just go and make friends with all these people.
You pretend you're an AI.
That's me.
It's like your full-time job is to message all these people.
Don't worry, it's me.
I love that.
Ava, what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I had a conversation with someone about this recently because someone close to them was developing a relationship with an AI.
Wow.
And I think that on a case, like a lot of things, on a case-by-case basis, on an individual level, I think it can be helpful at least in a temporary way. But I think that because of the broader context, it's like a slippery slope. And it is a problem that probably wouldn't be as bad if we had community still and we had third places and like all the stuff that people are talking about now of like these things that we've lost. But so I think that because of the context, it's not great. But I think that there would be people, like, no matter how much community you have, even if you have super strong bonds, where it would be great to have like an AI that can understand you, especially there's all this research about how lonely people tend to be more like idiosyncratic in the way that they think about things. So they're different not only from the average person, but also from other lonely people. And if there was like some kind of companion, even if it were artificial, whatever that means, that could understand them to a different level with the addition of the rest of their community, I think that could be a great thing. But it's like, it's just like AI for the other things that we've talked about. Like, I think it can be great. I've used it for Beth, like I used it to have difficult conversations where I will rant to my AI for 2 hours and then I ask it to condense my thoughts. That really helps. Like, that's helped me so much to just reduce time and stress of like hard conversations that I've had to have. But I think that because it's so easy to use and people will use it as a shortcut, also again, because of the context that we're in and the pressures that are on all of us and the incentive structures that we live in, it inevitably is going to be like making us dumber. And I think it's the same thing with AI companionship. Inevitably, it will make us on the whole lonelier, even if it makes one or two people or the individual less lonely in the short term, if that makes sense. And I think I feel like all of these issues are like climate change, AI, like all of these things come down to prioritizing short-term gains over long-term. And I think it's just the same thing with this stuff. So it'd be great if we had these developments, but also had strong friendships and strong, even weak ties with people, but that you know your mailman. You can invite your mailman in to have some milk. I don't know what people did when there were strong communities.
No, I was going to say, I think also the problem, it's like, political capitalism, whatever. Obviously, that's the problem.
Whatever.
But I'm just trying not to dwell too much on that. But just technology in general, right? The whole project is to make everything convenient and quicker because of capitalism. And now in the space of like emotions and human relationships, basically what it's doing is, again, making everything easier, more convenient and quicker, and privileging positive experiences and positive emotions. And so much of the research in technology design, the space that I'm in, is just like, how do we make people happy? That's the measure. If you're talking about like relationships with technology, it's like people liked it, like in this short study, it made people happier or they enjoyed using it. But there's just something like massively missing, I think, from that, which is that the best part about human relationships is not just all the good things, right? And when you have an AI you're trying to talk to and be in a relationship with, it essentially can only tell you what you enjoy hearing, right? So it can't do the difficult part. It only is half of a relationship because it can't ever like, I guess you could potentially do this. And I think this is an interesting thing to be explored, but it doesn't have the not authority or maybe the agency to challenge you. I mean, we wouldn't even want that because it's like Mark Zuckerberg or whoever is behind the model. So you want to be the one in control and to lead it in a particular direction. So basically what it's doing, I think, is just reinforcing and not actually giving you what you need to find meaning in your life. I mean, I know I also have used it for talking through things and emotional problems, I think. But it's just like a much more long-term problem, where if it's just reinforcing the biases and things that we already have, then it's that whole process can spiral out of control. And I don't know, I just think it's just basically half of it is completely missing. And I don't really know how to, until it is actually like conscious or intelligent or can assert its own agency and we respect that, it's hard to imagine how people will like emotionally or socially grow from being in a relationship with it.
Yeah, I never really thought about that it's just all there to make us happy and there's nothing.
Because they want people to use it.
Yeah, and like what that could do to us is a whole nother.
I think even just before the AI stuff, just even social media, and I think I just really push against like convenience as well, because I think I was always thinking of it in terms of creative practice. And this is the problem with whatever Midjourney, all these things, is the practice itself is so like devoid now, like if compared to what people who actually even, I mean, drawing with their hands, drawing with real materials, or even on an iPad or whatever, there's something about it that like is like physically like embodied and like learned as a skill. But when you remove all of that, it's like this, it's the actual difficulty of learning something is the satisfaction.
Yeah.
And like becoming really good at a skill is the satisfaction of creating, and the like the pain of learning, right? Yeah. That's where you get, I'm sure this is like cognitive science, thing, right? That's where you get meaning. Would you really want to like download in your brain, oh, I can just play piano perfectly and...
Yeah, like...
Probably, but...
Maybe.
But yeah, it's just missing something, because it's like we think that we just want everything to be good.
Because then it's like, that's the point of life, right? Doing things. Like, so if we stop doing them, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
right,
learning, growing, then getting meaning through this development. And if you could just, oh, I can just do all that.
It's, I think it's super demoralizing. It's hard to really imagine what, I'm sure that it'll look, I mean, I think, I don't have that like real doomer outlook because I think the way people will adapt will be really interesting. I don't think people will just be like, oh yeah, this is totally fine. Like, what's that movie? Idiocracy or something? I don't know. I don't think it'll just go in a direction of everyone's just dumb and...
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not sure that will happen. I think there's like counter movements and like other things will... People will respond in a particular way. People will realize... Like I probably just am projecting this as well, but it's happening with social media. Like most people you ask hate it. And they still use it. So there's something obviously like some dissonance going on that's going to... Something's going to change, right? Like how long can people just be like, I hate this, but I have to use it?
Yeah.
So there's going to be some kind of shift. Like predicting things.
That's
2027.
We can do a follow-up.
Yeah.
But yeah, this has been super interesting. And I also, I'm going to go in and I'll go to the Collingwood Yards and interact with the mirror and we can share it on social media, which...
Please do.
Please do. But it's really cool. And your work definitely, challenged my perception on AI, which I think is really cool. And I love the idea of that being done through art, because no one was going to tell me otherwise.
Of the final champion of AI art. I made it through.
But would you like to just share with us what you're excited about that's coming up next?
In my life, or you mean?
Yeah, like
world,
Korea.
Yes, research. Yeah. I'm moving to Copenhagen, moving more into philosophy of AI, kind of interested, and then philosophy of mind, interested in like cognitive science perspectives and how. And there's so much kind of confusion, even for me, around to what extent an AI operates in the same way as a human mind. But I think it's a really cool problem. And then also then, if we have like really like clear models of each one, how then we could understand or even like simulate and analyze like how that relationship will play out over time, which is like pretty ambitious, but
I believe you can do it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So ambitious.
And you'll be at the University of Copenhagen?
Yeah.
All right. Everyone stay tuned for Nina's amazing career.
Thank you to Dr. Nina Rychik for joining us this episode. Our intro and outro music is Nobody Stayed for the DJ by Glacio. Our transition music is Back for More, also by Glacio. Minds Matter is mixed, edited, and created by Beth Fisher, she's the Australian one, and me, Ava Montesouza. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a brand new episode, but in the meantime, find all our episodes and show notes on mindsmatterpodcast.com.